The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. And we are going to be looking at another article, Bill W.'s, that he wrote for the Grapevine. Out of the book of the same title as the show, almost, The Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings from 1944 to 1970, with our good friend Chris S. Hey, Chris.
Monty, good to see you tonight.
You too, my friend. What are we doing this week?
Well, we're talking about humility. This article was written in June 1961. It is on page 254 of The Language of the Heart, and it's called Humility for Today. And, you know, I'm really, really glad we're going to be speaking about humility tonight, Monty, because it's a subject I believe I'm an expert in. I actually pride myself on my humility. So, going through this article is going to be a lot of fun.
You know, I'll never forget hearing a guy that's been around for years. He's still around up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll never forget one time when he was speaking, he said, you know, anybody that speaks on humility in a 12-step meeting, they probably don't know much about it. And then he went on for 20 minutes talking about it.
Well, I certainly know more about humility than he does. I'm just finishing up my fourth volume, Humility and Beyond.
There you go.
We'll know what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, you betcha.
And I'll have a humility contest with anybody who doubts the level of my humility.
There you go. There you go. Oh, and besides all the books you've written on this subject, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my God. All the Wikipedia articles.
Oh my God.
So anyway, I hope everybody knows we're just joking.
I hope so.
but if you'll remember, the article that we read prior to this was really leading up. This is God as we understand Him, the dilemma of no faith. It really was leading up to this thing called humility. And it's something, you know, we alcoholics can be humiliated quite often. Humility is like a different thing.
Yes.
It's being right-sized, I think. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To have an accurate self-appraisal rather than inflated negatively or positively. You know, truly understanding, you know, what, you know, the exact cog in the wheel of life that you particularly are. And we'll see what Bill has to say, because I'm telling you, this was a topic that he brought up again and again and again and again. It's all throughout the 12 and 12. It's all throughout the big book. Every letter he wrote, you know, he would reference it. So let's see what he has to say about humility for today.
All right.
There can be no absolute humility for us humans. Wow, nice way to start. You know, absolute humility is impossible. At best, we can only glimpse the meaning and splendor of such a perfect ideal. As the book Alcoholics Anonymous says, we are not saints. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Only God Himself can manifest in the absolute. We human beings must needs live and grow in the domain of the relative. We seek humility for today. Therefore, our practical question is this. just what do we mean by humility for today? And how do we know when we have found it? You know, this is typical Bill. He'll ask the question, then he'll explain his perspective on
sure.
it. We scarcely need be reminded that excessive guilt or rebellion leads to spiritual poverty. But it was a very long time before we knew we could go even more broke on spiritual pride. When we early AAs got our first glimmer of how spiritually prideful we could be, we coined this expression, "Don't try to get too damn good by Thursday." That old-time admonition may look like another of those handy alibis that can excuse us from trying for our best, yet a closer view reveals just the contrary. This is our AA way of warning against pride, blindness, and the imaginary perfections that we do not possess. Oh man, you know, Monty, they're telling me that I may not be an expert in this thing called humility. I'm not sure I'm going to get my Humility and Beyond volumes published.
Yeah, you may have to back out of some of those earlier statements tonight.
Oh, man. Now we no longer patronize bars and bordellos. That's the first time Bill has admitted to
hanging out in bordellos.
Bordello. I didn't know he was a bordelloer. Now that we bring home the paychecks, now that we are so very active in AA, and now the people congratulate us on these signs of progress, well, we naturally proceed to congratulate ourselves. Yet we may not be within hailing distance of humility. Meaning well, yet doing badly, how often have I said or thought, I am right and you are wrong. My plan is correct and yours is faulty. Thank God your sins are not my sins. You are hurting AA and I'm going to stop you cold. I have God's guidance and so he is on my side and so on indefinitely. You know, I guess he's describing manifestations of spiritual pride, Monty.
Yeah.
And not only have we seen this, we've lived in some of it, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
The alarming thing about such pride, blindness, is the ease with which it is justified. But we need not look far to see that this descriptive brand of self-justification is a universal destroyer of harmony and of love. It sets a person against a person, nation against a nation. By it, every form of folly and violence can be made to look right, and even respectable. Of course, it is not for us to condemn. We need only investigate ourselves. You know, each one, we say this every show, each one of these paragraphs is chock full of, you know, divine recovery wisdom, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. If you were so inclined to find topics for a meeting in any of his articles, all you have to do, look no further than just one paragraph.
Yeah. I mean, you could talk ad infinitum on any of these. How then can we do more and more without reducing our guilt, rebellion, and pride? When I inventory such defects, here's another place where he's saying he inventories defects. Still, it's 1961. He got sober in 1935. So, you know, that's pretty cool. I like to draw a picture and tell myself a story. My picture is that of a highway to humility, and my story is an allegory. On one side of my highway, I see a great bog. The highway's edge borders a shallow marsh, which finally shelves down into the muddy morass of guilt and rebellion in which I have so often floundered. Self-destruction lies in wait out there, and I know this. But the country on the other side of the road looks fine. I see inviting glades and beyond them great mountains. The countless trails leading into this pleasant land look safe. It will be easy, I think, to find one's way back. Together with numbers of friends, I decide to take a brief detour. We pick our path and happily plunge along it. Elatedly, somebody soon says, maybe we better find gold. Maybe we'll find gold on top of that mountain. Then to our amazement, we do strike gold, not nuggets, in the streams, but fully minted coins. The heads of these coins each declare, "This is pure gold, 24 carats. Surely we think this is the reward for our patient plodding back there in the everlasting brightness of the highway." Soon, though, we begin to notice the words on the tails of our coins, and we have a strange foreboding. Some pieces carry rather attractive inscriptions. "I am power. I am acclaim. I am wealth. I am righteousness," they say. But others seem very strange. For example, "I am the master race. I am the benefactor. I am good causes. I am God." This is very puzzling. Nevertheless, we pocket them. But next come real shockers. They read, "I am pride, I am revenge, I am disunity, I am chaos." Then we turn up a single coin, just one, which declares, "I am the devil himself." Some of us are horrified and we cry, "This is fool's gold, and this is a fool's paradise. Let's clear out of here." But many would not return with us. They said, "Let's stay here and sort over these damn coins. We'll pick only the ones that carry the lucky inscriptions. For instance, those that say power and glory and righteousness. You fellows are going to be sorry you didn't stick around." Not strangely, it was years before this part of our original company returned to the highway. They told us the story of those who had sworn never to return. They had said, "This money is real gold, and don't tell us any different. We're going to pile up all we can. Sure, we don't like these fool mottos, but there's plenty of firewood here. We'll just melt all this stuff down into real solid gold bricks. Then our late arrivals arrived. This is how the gold of pride claimed our brothers. They were already quarreling over their bricks when we left. Some were hurt and a few were dying. They had begun to destroy each other. This symbolic picture graphically tells me what I may attain. Humility for today, only to the extent that I'm able to avoid the bog of guilt and rebellion, and that fair but deceiving land which is strewn with the coin of pride. This is how I can find and stay on the road to humility which lies in heaven, lies in between. Therefore, a constant inventory which can reveal when I am off the road is always in order." You know, that's a pretty detailed and pretty complex allegory that he put together there about finding the fool's gold. I do know what he means, and there's been many people. So Monty, to relate this to my experience within the Recovery Fellowship, there's been many people who have gone off the path, seen things that they believed were more valuable, and all of a sudden they lost their way. It happens all the time. So that's kind of what I think Bill is telling us here, that there are going to be bright, shiny objects. There are going to be things that we think are more important than going to the Tuesday discussion meeting or whatever, right?
Yes.
And hopefully people get back. Hopefully people who go down those roads come back.
You know, I'm watching this happen with somebody right now. I'm watching this friend of mine who has really benefited from his step work, from the freedom he has found in the spiritual awakening as a result of his step work, carrying the message to other people, even to the extent of sponsoring others. And he's starting to go down a different road. It's not a bad road. It's a healthy road. It's fine. But I always am a little hesitant to say, you know, hip hip hooray, good for you, when I see that he's leaving his original birthplace, if you will, behind. You know what I mean? There are people that do. And they go in a different direction, and they stay in recovery, and even in 12-step recovery, and they do well. But I haven't seen too many of them succeed that completely leave their original birthplace of health behind completely. I just haven't. It seems like we lose them along the way somewhere.
If they are alcoholic, they're not going to be successful.
Yeah,
they're always going to be torn up emotionally. I'm seeing this happen with one of my closest friends on the planet. He You know, there was a lot of really good things that he got involved with. He got married. Now, this is a guy in his 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Much younger wife. She wanted children. So, you know, he got the doctors and everything, and they were successful. They had a beautiful baby girl. And then they decided, let's live in Manhattan. So, you know, they moved to Manhattan. And then he decided, I'm going to go back to college. And, you know, I'm going to get a degree. And so he went back to college. Now, none of these things, Monty, are bad.
Right.
But when you put them all together in a short amount of years, what they did was they moved time to the point where he couldn't maintain consistent meetings. He couldn't continue to work with other people. He couldn't keep his service commitments because these really, really good things were there for him to grab.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't he deserve these things?
Yeah.
And the other day he was put in his third treatment center. The police were called. They found unregistered guns. They found hypodermic needles. He's got a restraining order against him from his family. A divorce is in the mail, and his professional license was taken away.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like this last week. So, and I guarantee he's going to blame it on everybody else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guarantee he's going to blame. Because what's wrong with getting a degree? What's wrong with living in Manhattan away from his home group? What's wrong with getting married? What's wrong with having having a second, you know, family of children? What's really wrong with that, Monty?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Nothing. But it's fool's gold.
Yes.
If you're an alcoholic.
And you know what? I think it turns into idolatry. I really do. We start worshiping these things that were meant to be beneficial, but we become slaves to them almost. I've seen people do that, you know, within the 12-step fellowships, where they become, we've talked about this before, they become meeting dependent, or step dependent, or sponsor dependent, and not dependent on the one that all those things are pointing to, right? And,
yeah.
and so pretty soon it's like they're complaining about everything. And the wisest thing you can say to them is, you know what? You're going to too many meetings, dude. You need to get with your sponsor, sit down, have a serious heart to heart, and refocus, hit the reset button. And so, you know, the bright, shiny thing that is attracting you isn't always your friend.
Yeah, so Bill is talking about walking down a path. On the left is like a morass, you know, that's like your past. It's like a swamp.
Yeah.
And on the right is this beautiful world. And what I think he's saying is stay on the path.
Mm.
We have a path. We have a way of life that works.
Yeah.
All right. Aren't you sober now? You know, isn't your life getting better, maybe by inches at a time, but isn't it getting better? Stay on that path.
Yeah.
And for one reason or another, you and I have done that. For decades. We've been path followers. And it's not like we're smarter than other people, but you know, we're still sober.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have handgun charges.
No, and we're not, not just abstinent. We've, and I give all credit to God, but we have grown spiritually, mentally, emotionally. We have,
yeah.
You know, I'm not the same guy I was even a year ago.
Oh yeah. You listen to Walking Through the Big Book that we did 14 years ago or something. And we sound like different people,
yeah,
right?
It's true.
And that's a good thing, you know.
It is a good thing.
That's progress. All right, it says, of course, our first attempts at such inventories are not to prove very unrealistic. I used to be a champ at unrealistic self-appraisal. I wanted to look only at the part of my life which seemed good. Then I would greatly exaggerate whatever virtues I suppose I had attained. Next, I would congratulate myself on the grand job I was doing. So my unconscious self-deception never failed to turn my few good assets into serious liabilities. This astonishing process was always a pleasant one. Naturally, this generated a terrible hankering for still more. accomplishments and still more approval. I was falling straight back into the pattern of my drinking days. Here were the same old goals, power, fame, and applause. Besides, I had the best alibi known, the spiritual alibi. The fact that I really did have a spiritual objective always made this utter nonsense seemed perfectly right. I couldn't tell a good coin from a bad one. It was a spiritual gold bricking at its worst. I shall forever regret the damage I did to people around me. Indeed, I still tremble when I realize what I might have done to AA and to its future.
Wow.
In those days, I wasn't much bothered about the areas of life in which I was standing still. There was always the alibi. After all, I said to myself, I'm far too busy with much more important matters. That was my near-perfect prescription for comfort and complacency. But sometimes I would simply have to look at certain situations where, on the face of them, I was doing very badly. Right away, a rousing rebellion would set in. Then the search for excuses would become frantic. These, I would exclaim, are really a good man's faults. When that pet gadget finally broke apart, I would think, well, if those people would only treat me right, I wouldn't have to behave the way I do. Next in order was, God well knows that I do have awful compulsions. I just can't get over this one. So he will have to release me. At last came the time when I would shout, this I positively will not do. I won't even try. Of course, my conflicts went right on mounting because I was simply loaded with excuses and refusals. You know, Muncie, tonight I did a talk at the treatment center that I talk at on Monday nights. And tonight, for one reason or another, I talked about bottoms. Huh. You know, what is a bottom? You got to hit bottom. Nobody ever gets better until they hit bottom. Well, what is a bottom? And what I was explaining to these people were a bottom is simply an understanding that you're going to be unable to completely solve the dilemma that you're in. You're going to need help. And a bottom is having coming to the realization that you must ask for help and asking for help. That's kind of what my bottom looked like. And until I did that, I kept drinking.
So being convinced is what you're saying. Yeah.
Being convinced that I'm up against something. It's too big for me. I need help. And being willing to accept that help, it was hard for me to ask for it, but it was being offered, you know. So the willingness to accept that help, I think, was you know, the bottom and the aftermath of a bottom.
Sure.
And you know, it doesn't really relate to how much you drank or how much trouble you got in or any. It has to do with your relationship with alcohol and your experience with alcoholism.
Yeah.
That's at least what I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think we're so used to, wow, he really hit bottom. Well, what does that mean? I mean, he ended up in jail. He lost his wife. You know, he can't drive for 3 years and he ended up in the hospital. So he's hit bottom. Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my friend that I was speaking about. I think if he would have hit a bottom and would have been willing to come back into our fold, I wouldn't have gotten a phone call. So quite obviously, his experience that he's going through right now is not sufficient to qualify as a bottom. And I'll tell you, you know, one piece of that. One of the things that he's experiencing of the many might be enough for any of us to say, okay, I give. Give me the meeting book. Circle the meetings you want me at. You know, will you sponsor me? You know, a lot of times it's just different for each person. Some of us are so stubborn. We never accept help and we die of alcoholism.
So let me ask you this question. It baffles me. It baffled me when I had my first relapse as well. It baffles me that we can go for years applying and implementing the spiritual disciplines in those steps. We can carry that message. We can trust God, help others, do that whole thing. And then something happens And it may not be drinking. It may be something else. And we're a mess. And instead of grabbing on to what we know so well and have been teaching others so well and even applying so well, we don't do it. Why is that?
There's a characteristic of alcoholism that balks. We're balkers. Yeah. I'll give you an example. Like I had a stack of amends cards, you know, 2 inches high, and I was absolutely determined to go through those amends. And every single time I came to an amends, I said to myself, "Oh, this is going to go bad. This is going to be bad. This is going to be bad." I know the 63 amends that I did before, I got a great response, and I was really happy I did them all. But this one is gonna be bad. I know it. I said that with every card.
That's funny.
So I think there's an internal, you know, default balking mechanism that we have that has to be overcome with prayer and power,
yeah,
and fellowship, and you know, every single tool in the book needs to be put up against that defiance. You know what,
yep,
I mean?
Yeah.
When these troubles had finally exhausted me enough, there was yet another escape. I would commence to wallow in the bog of guilt. Here, pride and rebellion would give way to depression. Though the variations were many, my main theme always was, how God-awful I am. Just as I had exaggerated my robust attainments by pride, so now I would exaggerate my defects through guilt. I would race about, confessing all, and even a great deal more, to whoever would listen. Believe it or not, I took that to be great humility on my part, and I counted this as my sole remaining asset and consolation. Holy mackerel. Mm. So guilt and pride are the opposite sides of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I relate to that, because in the beginning I had to be worse than you, or I had to be, yeah, better than you.
Yeah, he even says that I would race about confessing all and a great deal more. It almost sounds like maybe he made stuff up too. You know?
Yeah. So, you know, so I don't want to be middle of the road. I don't want to, you know,
right.
I don't want to be, you know, average. even if I have to be bad, I don't want to be average.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
During those bouts with guilt, there was never a decent regret for the harms I had done, nor was there any serious thought of making such restitution as I could. The idea of asking God's forgiveness, let alone any forgiveness of myself, never occurred to me. Of course, my really big liability, spiritual pride and arrogance, was not examined at all. I had shut out the light by which I might have seen it. Today, I think I can trace a clear linkage between my guilt and my pride. Both of them were certainly attention getters. In pride, I could say, look at me, I'm wonderful. In guilt, I would moan, I'm awful. Therefore, guilt is really the reverse side of the coin of pride. Guilt aims at self-destruction, and pride aims at the destruction of others. This is in squiggly font, Monty.
Yep.
This is why I see humility for today as that safe and secure stance midway between these violent emotional extremes. It is a quiet place where I can keep enough perspective, enough balance to take my next small step up the clearly marked road that points toward eternal values.
That is good.
Wow, that would, yeah, make a good poster, that paragraph, wouldn't it?
That really, really good. In fact, I'd include the paragraph before it, too.
You'd have to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Isn't that something?
Guilt aims at self-destruction, and pride aims at the destruction of others. Ooh.
Many of us have experienced far greater emotional gyrations than I. Others have experienced less. But all of us still have them at times. Yet I think we need not regret these conflicts. They seem to be a necessary part of growing up, emotionally and spiritually. They are the raw materials out of which much of our progress has to be made. Does anyone ask if AA is but a retching pit of pain and conflict? The answer is certainly not. In great measure, we AAs have really found peace. However, haltingly, we've managed to attain an increasing humility whose dividends have been serenity and legitimate joy. We do not detour as much or as far as we once did. Wow, we've managed to attain an increasing humility, and the dividends of that humility are serenity and legitimate joy, Monty.
Amen.
Man, yeah. Oh, man.
Preach it, Bill.
Bill, at the outset of this meditation, it was thought that absolute ideals are far beyond our attainment, or even our comprehension, that we would be sadly lacking in humility if we really felt that we could achieve anything like absolute perfection in this brief span of earthly existence. Such a presumption would certainly be the acne of spiritual pride. Reasoning thus, many people will have no truck at all with absolute spiritual values. Perfectionists, they say, are either full of conceit because they fancy they have reached some impossible goal, or else they are swamped in self-condemnation because they have not done so. Yet I think we should not hold this view. It is not the fault of great ideals that they are sometimes misused and so become shallow excuses for guilt, rebellion, and pride. On the contrary, we cannot grow very much unless we constantly try to envision what the eternal spiritual values are. As step 11 of AA's recovery program says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. This surely means that we ought to look toward God's perfection as our guide rather than as a goal to be reached in any foreseeable time. That's another thing that I like to talk to the people at the treatment center about, Monty, about the difference between a chronic and an acute illness. A chronic illness is gonna take continual participation in the treatment process, and acute means that you go for a certain amount of time and you're cured, or you're healed, and you can move on with your life. So Bill is telling us this spiritual way of life is something that we're going to have to continue.
And I think a lot of people get this confused because they think what we're saying is that you'll never recover. That's not what we're saying. And you've talked about it before. Recovered means the symptoms are gone. Cured means the illness is gone.
Right.
We still have the illness. Like, if I'm allergic to peanuts, I'm still allergic to peanuts. I'm not all swelled up and, dying because I've recovered with the help of the EpiPen, right? But I think people get that confused because, that I've teamed up with the Came to Believe folks. And, we teach that. We teach that you can enter into a state of recovery, but it's going to take cooperation by you. But it doesn't mean that you're cured. And once you walk around thinking that you're cured, I don't know. For me, I'm in deep weeds when I start thinking that way, because then I get real sloppy.
Well, when you think you're cured, you can give up all this AA stuff because there's no need for it anymore.
Yeah, I don't need to help others. I don't need to do any of it.
When you're recovered, you're going to pay attention to what helped you recover and continue to participate in that to stay recovered.
Amen. Yep.
I'm sure, for instance, that I ought to seek out the finest definition of humility that is possible for me to envision. This definition doesn't have to be absolutely perfect. I am only asked to try. Suppose I choose one like this. Perfect humility would be a state of complete freedom from myself, freedom from all the claims that my defects of character now lay so heavily upon me. Perfect humility would be a full willingness in all times and places to find and do the will of God. That is an extremely deep and profound definition of humility, Monty. Mine's a little simpler, but that has a lot of beauty to it.
Yeah.
When I meditate upon a vision, I need not be dismayed because I shall never attain it, nor need I swell with presumption that one of these days its virtues shall be all mine. I only need to dwell on the vision itself, letting it grow ever more to fill my heart. This done, I can compare it with my last taken personal inventory. Then I get a sane and healthy idea of where I actually stand on the highway to humility. I see that my journey toward God has scarce begun. As I thus get down to my right size and stature, my self-concern and importance become amusing. Then faith grows that I do have a place on this highway, that I can advance upon it with deepening peace and confidence. Once more, I know that God is good, that I need fear no evil. This is a great gift, this knowledge that I do have a destiny. As I continue to contemplate God's perfection, I discover still another joy. As a child, hearing my first symphony, I was lifted up into its indescribable harmony, though I knew little of how and whence it came. So today, when I listen for God's music of the spheres, I can now and again hear those divine chords by which I am told that the great composer loves me and that I love him.
Mm.
Wow.
What an encouraging article. It's just filled
wow.
with it's just filled with good news, I think.
Yeah, and it's perfect, Bill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is absolutely perfect, Bill.
You know, I was thinking this last paragraph, you're talking about the symphony and all that stuff. When my youngest boy was going to university, and he was very involved in the orchestra and even doing some conducting work, he would tell me before we'd go see him, he'd say, "Now, Dad, don't take pictures. I want you to be in the moment. I want you to enjoy it." And I said, "Yeah, but I want to take the picture." He goes, "Don't do it. It's a distraction. Just enjoy it." And I kind of identify with Bill here. You know, sometimes we get so wrapped up in needing to accomplish things, you know, perfectly and to our satisfaction, that we forget to enjoy what we're going through. And I mean, when you think about it, I love going to meetings, man. People, you know, people say, "Well, why do you have to still go to those meetings?" Well, one reason isn't because I'm sick. It's because I like it. I enjoy it. I love hanging out with people that I love hanging out with. Come on. You know.
Absolutely. And one of them's crazier than the other, Monty. And you know, aren't they?
Yeah.
And we fit right in there. We're a piece of that puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. Well, check this out. So from humility to honesty, here he goes again next week.
Boy.
This matter of honesty, boy, if he addresses that as well as he did the humility thing, we'll have some more good news. Let's see here. Is that a long article? No, I guess not too bad. Okay.
We'll get her done.
Yeah, we'll get her done. Well, Chris, thank you so much. Another great show. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this.
This was a great one, Monty. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, make sure you stay tuned to the very end of the show so you can figure out. So you will know how to get caught up on all of the episodes of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for each and every one of you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.